Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and I'm privileged to welcome a very, very well-recognized coach from the US, John Baldoni. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ash. It's a pleasure to be on this show. And I know you've had so many fantastic guests, and your legacy of leadership is a blessing to all of us. And I'm thank you for your interest in coaching and spreading the word about the power of coaching.
Thank you so much. John is a master corporate executive coach. He's an author of 15 books. And those of you who know me know that I'm very partial to authors. He's a sought-after communications consultant. He's been recognized by the International Federation of Learning and Development as a world-class mentor. And he's host of LinkedIn Live's Grace Under Pressure series. So, John, let's first talk about coaching. After a successful corporate career, what made you become a coach?
Well, I never had a corporate career, to be honest with you. I've always been an independent. My entree into coaching began because I met someone who's become a good friend, Marshall Goldsmith. And he said, you ought to be a coach, John. But seriously, I had gone back to school, and I had by that time written some books and had a background in management and things like that. But I began my career as a executive speechwriter. So as from that perspective, I got to see how things worked or didn't work in the C-suite. So it gave me an insight into how organizations function. And so I became a coach after I was a corporate communications person. So.
Okay, interesting. And, you know, I've often been asked this question that there is a very fine line that separates coaching and mentoring. I would love to get your perspective on what is the difference.
That's a good question. Well, let's begin with a position. A mentor is someone who is disinterested in the person. I don't mean uninterested, but has no commercial gain from the person. So mentoring is a process, a long longitudinal process of development. It uses the techniques of coaching, questioning, advising, that kind of thing. Coaching tends to be a little bit more shorter framework, although I've had clients with whom I've worked for years. But I'd say they're two distinct things. Mentors don't get paid. Executive coaches do. Now, here's where the line gets blurred a little bit. I believe firmly that all organizations, all managers need to be coaches. Now, that doesn't make them executive coaches, but in that role of developing others, they bring out the best in them. And many, and I know you would, I'm sure you are probably a beneficiary of this, but you see many examples of the first boss with whom we stay in contact with because they have helped us and they become our mentor. And they might even still be coaching us and things like that. But coaching and mentoring are two separate disciplines.
Very well said. In fact, you know, when I was growing up and as a young manager, I often said that coaching was done by either a senior in the company who took a fancy for you or an elder in the family. Now it's become a very, very organized profession. But tell me.
It's a wonderful. Yes, exactly. So.
Thank you. So I was asking you, you know, how can coaching benefit an individual, whether it's a professional or an entrepreneur?
Well, executive coaching is a process of self-discovery. Your executive coach is there to be your guide. He or she listens, observes, talks to other people around you to get a perspective of how you are doing, and then invites you to say, what are your goals? What do you want to accomplish in our working relationship as a coach. So it is one-on-one, but it's focused on individual development. And I want to make a distinction. Coaching is not training. Mm-hmm. Coaching is developmental. Coaches, training is skill acquisition, which is so important in our world. But coaching is that process of self-discovery. And as discovery, when you try things with your coach and do things, they may not all work. And they may not be relevant at the moment that they are shared with you. But 6 months later or 6 years later, people will have this moment of oh, wow, that's what coaching, that's what my coach meant. So it's a kind of enlightenment. The other thing is good coaches are, I like to say this, two things. Coaches are cheerleaders. We are in your corner, especially the very senior leaders. We want you to succeed. We cheer for your success. At the same time, our job is not just to pat you on the back. Our job is to challenge your assumptions so that you come to a better understanding of yourself. A coach is there to challenge you, to maybe make you feel a little uncomfortable so that you go through this process of considering what it is you really want to do and how you do it and how you can do it better.
Very well said. And a question now from perspective of the coachee or the person who is being coached, how do I, as your coachee, evaluate that I have the right coach?
Well, we in the coaching business call it chemistry. There's a connection that you form with your coach. You feel comfortable with them. Then you feel you know that the coach has your best interests at heart. And that's not going to happen the first time you meet. And when I meet someone in coaching, I say, I respect your confidence, but tell me what you're comfortable sharing with me. And as we go progress in this coaching engagement, I will learn more about you and you will learn more about me. And so this relationship develops. But from a coachee's perspective, you want a coach who listens. You want a coach who feels that who will listen to what you're going to say, who will give you perspective. Why? Because that coach has been around the block, as we say, a few times. He or she has observed many similar situations to what the individual is going through. And also, good coaches need to have a methodology. And my methodology is nothing unique, but it's a process of assessment, action planning, and evaluation. And within that framework, it gives us the structure to develop coaching goals and move forward from there.
So. Interesting. So one more question regarding coaching before I move to the next segment. At what stage of my life in my career should I look for a coach?
I think it starts at a very, whenever you're ready to grow and develop. Once upon a time, executive coaching was actually reserved for people in remedial situations, people who were getting in trouble. Now it's much more broad, and organizations are offering coaching to people just joining the company. On the other side, there's also I usually work with very senior executives, and so that's in the C-suite, and so that's their senior team. And very often when I work with them is individually, of course, but I also work with them as their group so they can develop/coach their own immediate team.
Very interesting. So, John, I'm now going to move to the next segment of our conversation, which is on communication, and you are a communications guru. So my first question to you is, what are the most common errors people make in communication, and how can we correct these mistakes?
Well, thank you for calling me a communication guru. My wife might disagree. She's always telling me that how poorly I communicate. Well, I mean, it's what I said earlier. It's about coaching, is that communication is listening. And we say that leaders need to listen more than they speak. You know, the old axiom, you have two ears and one mouth. Use them proportionally. proportionately. So that's a perspective to take. But by listening, you're giving the other person recognition that he or she matters, especially, you know, Ash, you know, and in your corporate career and your entrepreneurial career, that when you as the senior most person would have a conversation with a frontline employee, how good that made them feel. And even better, Ash, when you listen to that person, how does that make them feel that they're important? And when they do, it's not about puffing them up. It's about getting their ideas. And you well know that the people on the front line know a lot more about the day-to-day running of a business, since you did in retail, certainly, than a CEO who is in his or her office.
So one of the challenges a lot of organizations face is how to develop a good communication strategy. You know, people goof up, people, you know, trip on their toes, make mistakes, and then they scramble to, you know, fix the problem. So my question is, how does one work on a good strategy for communication?
Well, I mean, let me answer that in two different ways, strategically and tactically. Strategically is have a communication plan and audit it regularly. And by audit, I mean, you know, conduct surveys. Do you understand what we're saying? Do you have more? Always be open to feedback. Create feedback loops. That's the strategic overview. Tactically is challenge executives or insist that that executives listen, and communicate the message as they go forward on a daily basis. It's not a nice to do. It's what they need to do. And I have this little mantra. It's speaking, listening, and learning. Speak as a leader, listen as a leader, and learn. And here's something which is important, I think, Ash, and you would know this. Often what we observe is not what people are telling us. We need to read the body language. You know, if you go into an organization and you say, how's everything going? And they kind of head is down and they go, well, it's okay. You know, you have a vibe there that everything is not right. So you have to probe and ask good questions and be open-hearted. And most importantly, Ash, make it safe for people to speak up and speak out.
So. Interesting. And, you know, I'm going to ask you a different question now of communication, but many, many years ago, 3-4 decades ago, when I was much younger, the communications or the press releases that used to go out from a company, it was generally believed that release the bad news on a Friday, because nothing happens on weekend and press has a very short life on the weekend, and the good news on a Monday or Tuesday. But given the fact that today's social media is 24/7, the challenges of communications have increased dramatically. What are your thoughts?
Well, I understand that philosophy. I know it. The reality is if there's bad news, get it out as soon as possible. Because when you hold it back, people will find out and they'll make it worse. As you well know, rumor loves a vacuum. And so if there's no communication, but a suspicion that something's gone wrong, get it out there. And the other thing is an old axiom in public relations is that never turn a one-day story into a two-day story. By withholding information, by not being frank about it, then you only multiply it. The other thing about news, of corporate news or bad news or whatever challenging news, is be out front. In some ways, over communicate, keep people in the loop, let them know what's going on, and be open and forthright. And again, take questions and listen.
And in an environment of social media, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook, no matter how much you try to communicate, there are hundreds of people who are passing their own judgments. What is your advice to a communications manager?
Well, do what you can do. Don't worry about the clutter, the trash talk. If there are, I mean, in fairness, in our social media, there will be legitimate concerns raised. Address them, but don't worry about the scurrilous accusations, the name calling and all of that. Rise above that. And when you do it, it shows that you are bigger than this. At the same time, be responsive and acknowledge the problem and acknowledge the people who are trying to solve it, as well as the people who have been harmed. So
very well said. So I'm going to move to the next segment, which is to talk about your books on the subject of grace. I was fascinated when I was reading about you. Tell me about your books and also your LinkedIn Live Grace Under Pressure series.
Great. Thank you. Well, I've written 15 books, the first 13 of them were all focused on leadership. Actually, all of them are. But my first books were on communications and management and leadership, and I'm very proud of all of those books. Mm-hmm. But as it came out, I became more interested in the topic of grace. Now, what is grace? It's the catalyst for the greater good. And like you, Ash, I saw lots of acts of kindness around us, and I wanted to celebrate that. And I believe in the concept of grace as something that all of us can exhibit. And grace is a gift, and it's given to us without strings attached, and we pass it along to others. You can call it paying forward. But grace is bigger than that. It's generosity. It's respect. It's compassion. And as I like to say, from a leadership standpoint, leaders with grace act for the benefit of others, and then they energize, mobilize people for the common good, the greater good. So all of that is good. So that's the concept of grace. My newest book, which is the poster is over my shoulder, Grace Notes, is a reflection on where we have been in the pandemic year. And it began as a series of videos, and that really turned out to be a kind of poetic look at what I was feeling, what leaders were feeling about fear, isolation, but also resilience, building things better now, taking this pause and what can we do better? So it's a series of reflections. And I also illustrated it with my photography. So it was a way of me expressing myself in a little bit different way. That's it.
Okay. And what about the LinkedIn series, Grace Under Pressure?
Great. Well, Grace Under Pressure, it's a phrase that Hemingway supposedly used. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he ever really defined it, but what it means to me is acting with grace when the heat's on. So what do I mean? Staying calm, connected, deport yourself correctly. Don't act like the world is coming apart, even though it is. You as the leader have to keep it cool. And so the series, I've spoken to well over 100 people, individuals such as you, business leaders, and all different people with perspectives on what it means to lead under pressure, but with insights into what leadership the demands of leaders today, how they can cope with the uncertainty, with ambiguity. But getting back to grace under pressure, it's showing the kindness, consideration when the heat is on, you know, and that's where the challenges arise. And that's what people now in our time of pandemic, our time of crisis are looking for leaders with, we say, empathy, but compassion, a sense of humility and vulnerability. So these are topics that I explore in my show, which is on, most people watch it streamed, and it's on LinkedIn Live, of course, but also YouTube, Audible, and iTunes.
So. Wow. Okay. I'll look out for that now. So John, I'm now going to move to the last segment of our conversation. And all my young viewers and listeners love to get to know my guest a little more. So I have a few questions which I call personal questions. My first question to you is that in a career which has been so incredible, what would you say are three key milestones or pivot points?
Well, I was lucky I had the parents that I did. My father's now passed on. He was a family physician and very dedicated to his patients as well as his family. My mother's, bless her, is still going strong. And she was a local communitarian. She worked to bring people together. She even served as mayor in our hometown. She's a very educated woman, and she was a great mom. So we cherish her daily. So that was my thing. I'd have to say also, I was educated by the Jesuits. I had 8 years of Jesuit education. For all my flaws, it's not them, it's on me. But I had 8 years, of, or excuse me, 4 years of high school, and I went to Georgetown. Jesuits taught me to think, and they taught me to think critically. And then throughout my career, I've worked mostly as an independent. So I've forged my own career, but again, I've had a lot of help along the way from people who've mentored me, taught me, shared lessons with me, given me opportunities. So I'm blessed in many different ways.
Mm-hmm. So. Wonderful. I have time for three more questions. My next question is, you work in an area where you are constantly giving a lot of yourself to the people you work with. The question I have is, what are some of the core values you believe in?
Well, I mean, I do believe in the core values of grace. I try to be generous. I try to be compassionate. I try to be respectful of others. Do I always succeed? No. I'm a great case study because I'm always slipping and falling down. I know a better way, but I don't always act a better way. And to me, that gives me a sense of humility. Okay. But it also helps me, I think, when we in coaching, is, you know, life is not a linear progress. We have ups and downs. And the challenge is never get too high, never get too low, but also realize that you're going to have success, but you're going to have setbacks. And that's kind of what, if you look at people at my age, you're too young to think this way, Ash, but it's our legacy.
I'm 65. So I think I'm older than you.
Yeah. Oh, no. I will be 69 next month. So anyway. But it's our pluses and the good things we've done and then negative things we've done. And we add it up and we think, that's what we have. But, you know, unlike people at our age, Ash, it's not that your legacy is what we do right now. Our legacy began 40, 50 years ago. And it's all of the things we've contributed to. And hopefully at the end of it, they go, you made a positive difference.
Fantastic. My next question to you is that from where you are today, as you look back at everything that you've achieved, what does success mean to John?
Success is the sense of fulfillment and the sense of joy. And I take joy in family and in my relationship with my wife, my relationship with my friends and family. I take joy in music. I play piano. I take joy in the work I do. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to be in a position where I can share it with other people.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. And my last question now is, who or what inspires you to keep pushing yourself to do so many different things?
Well, I've had a lot of different inspirations, and it's people I see who are doing things differently. Marshall Goldsmith, on the one hand, for years has tried different media to get his message out. I've done the same thing. A colleague of mine, Dr. Mark Goulston, it's the same thing. Both of those gentlemen have mentored me in a certain way and challenged me to get my ideas out. But I also draw inspiration from my community. I see the good things that people do. And I think, wow, that's really, and it's that sense of selfless giving, which I don't put myself in that category, but I see a lot of it around. And that enriches our community and gives me inspiration to do what I do.
Fantastic. John, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and a privilege speaking to you. Thank you for, you know, talking to me about coaching, about communication, about grace. I mean, it's been such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you and good luck.
Well, thank you, Ash. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.